I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the third Skanom podcast. I'm your host, Niall Murphy, and with me today is reviews editor Philip Bagnall and features editor Jason Coyle. Today we're looking at the Irish box office top 10, some movie news, particularly concerning Disney, and Philip has brought a top 10 best soundtracks to worst films ever. I hope you enjoy. So I'm going to start off today with some news that has just broken today. So
I'm afraid.
What'd you break that for? Pick that up. Apologize.
We're our good close friends Den of Geek is reporting that there's a Banana Man movie going to be made.
Well, it's about time. That's what I would say. As a huge Banana Man fan,
yeah. I love Banana Man.
It's difficult to say, but it's great. No, I loved it.
Everybody loved Banana Man. Who didn't love Banana Man?
There's some killjoy out there, I'm sure, that wasn't a fan.
Probably. Usually I'm that killjoy, but yes. Not today.
Yeah. Banana Man, like the parody of almost every other superhero or supervillain that there was, is just absolutely amazing.
Right? Oh, I love him.
The list of his enemies include Witchy Woman, parody of the Scarlet Witch, Dr. Gloom. I wonder who he could be based on.
That's a Kildare, maybe.
Clayman. Who's a parody of Clayface. The Foul Five were based on the Famous Five. Like, it's
Famous Five, famous.
Supervillain.
Notorious supervillain.
That time when Eden Brighton went all Frank Miller on us.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Speaking of Frank Miller, Sin City 2, Dame to Kill For put out a whole load of images earlier. There are some glorious black and white images.
Thank you for sending me that picture of Ava Green. My day is made.
Yes, fine picture. Film doesn't particularly interest me, but we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
Aren't they leaving it a bit late, at like 9 years after, 10 years after the original?
You probably are. In terms of an audience, they may well be.
Rodriguez took a lot of time to get that going. Whatever the delays were.
The first film was one of those films that was very interesting and quite good the first time I seen it. And then on subsequent viewings, it seems to get worse and worse. Once you forget about how beautiful the thing is constructed.
Oh, yeah, it is.
The joins really...
It's
not great.
It's not particularly deep, but it is gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. It is.
So other big news to come out today is that Disney have been doing a stockholders meeting, and so as a result they have given out some information as to their next slate of movies. So they have announced that they're going to make The Incredibles 2.
Great.
Yay.
Yes. That is good news.
It really isn't.
No.
There's no world or universe that's...
Why is that not good? The Incredibles is brilliant.
Give me two words. Monsters University. There straight away.
No. Cars 2.
Yes.
Before that.
Also.
We need more original ideas. Less Finding Dory. Less Incredibles 2.
Yes.
What have all the original ideas dried up?
Well, their next two will be fun. The Inside Out and The Good Dinosaur. The Inside Out looks particularly...
Inside Out looks phenomenal.
And I look forward to The Inside Out 2 and 3 back-to-back in 2017.
Still Inside Out. Hung Inside Out.
Yes.
And
turning me Inside Out.
I can't believe it's still Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Also,
Davis.
On the Pixar slate, Cars 3 has been announced.
Finally, my petition has been answered.
Yeah, but that sums it up, really. That's a film nobody wanted, that probably no one will like except John Lasseter, and we're all going to be disappointed. And that's
I just won't see it. And I didn't see the second one. I don't see the point.
I think you could well be right.
Somebody just has to stop giving people money for making terrible movies.
Well, the one thing you've got to love about the Cars franchise is that it has spawned planes.
Yes.
Which isn't even Pixar.
Which are two.
Which I'm sure Hot Air Balloons is coming.
There are plans. So the planes is a trilogy, the second of which comes out this year. And then it's going to be followed by Trains. And
automobiles,
boats.
I presume, at the end.
Well, that's Cars. There, it's come full circle. John Candy is rolling in his grave. So overall, this entire conversation has depressed me. John Candy
is
still dead.
Is basically what we've said. John Candy is
we're
dead.
Not finished with the Disney
news.
There is more news. Yes. Disney have also revealed some new details about Star Wars Episode 7.
Every movie website revealing whatever nonsense it is.
Yes, go on.
They said that the film is going to be set 30 years in the future.
In
the future from the events of Episode 6.
Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
I believe it used to be known.
I presume midway between the end of Return of the Jedi and this new movie will be the extermination of the Ewoks. But I'm sure you'll map that in if you don't.
Also, it's the original trio are likely to be in it, but they still haven't confirmed that. But some very familiar faces is what they're saying. And a trio.
I've seen Mark Hamill's face. It doesn't look that familiar anymore.
And a trio of new leads.
Oh, God.
So it is very likely to feature.
This is going to just drip feed out for eons now, yes. Is that? I'm already sick of it. That hasn't even started.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's very, very likely to feature the children of Han and Leia.
I hope nobody tells them they're cousins so that they can have another quasi incestuous relationship in there somewhere.
So other than Disney depressing the hell out of me, is there anything else?
No, there's more. Disney depressing the hell out of you. We're not done yet. News coming from Disney is that they've signed up a director for the live-action version of The Little Mermaid.
Okay, I heard this.
Sofia Coppola is the...
okay,
Lars von Trier is the Little Mermaid.
Oh, well, no, if he's Danish, it would have made more sense.
Well, that doesn't matter.
Sofia Coppola's The Little Mermaid.
Well, it's about time she did something different, I guess.
Except
reimagining it. The Little Mermaid will be a rich teenage girl walking around New York in the 1940s.
No, swimming around Atlantis. That's what it'll
bored, having a mild existential crisis.
To a very happening hip soundtrack, yes. Absolutely.
So, the Little Mermaid, right, that's the latest one, but it joins two different versions of The Jungle Book. One directed by Jon Favreau, the other directed by Ron Howard.
Oh my god.
I feel like I'm in an alternative universe that's been written specifically for me, and it's hell.
Yeah, this is Bizarro World. I am in Bizarro World now, aren't I? What the hell?
I'm not done yet. A sequel to Alice in Wonderland.
Called Alice in Chains.
Directed by James Bobbin.
Oh no.
Yep. Pan.
Oh no.
About Peter Pan, directed by Joe Wright.
Oh, first bit of good news I've heard today.
I can live with that. Just about.
And then Cinderella by Kenneth Branagh.
I could live with that also.
That's on the way. That could be promising.
I like Maleficent. So.
I like Kenneth Branagh. That's pretty much all I could take out of the last 6 or 7 minutes. Sadly.
Oh, bless.
I don't like to be a killjoy, but I just damn so damn good at it.
Mm. Yeah. You don't ever change, Jay.
I'll try that.
All right, so that's all of your Disney news for today.
Oh, thank God.
I feel like I've lived 1,000 lives in the last little while.
Sofia Coppola, Little Mermaid. Really?
It's intriguing. In a kind of left field kind of way.
It just feels like
we have hipsters to appeal to. The new children are the hipsters. Quick,
well,
make something
for them.
Generation Y.
No, there's
Generation Y?
Z.
No, aren't they called Millennials?
Yeah, no. They're called something else in my house. I think Generation Z is also another variation of that.
Yeah, but they
God,
isn't...
God, we sound so old. Good Lord.
All of the memes...
They're great.
It's my
birthday. They're really great.
Of course I'm going to feel
all
old.
Of the hipster memes feature, like, Ariel with the hipster glasses.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's only about a matter of time before they package it in that regard. So.
Yep.
And he couldn't have picked a better director in that regard also. So.
Oh, absolutely. The whole thing... If it wasn't for the fact that she has fins where her bottom should be, I'd say she's probably going to disappear up her own arms.
I look forward
Emma
to thinking about
that. Emma Ariel, then?
Yeah. Oh.
Okay, now hold on. You're going to put a different slant on this for me now. Be careful.
Manic Pixie Dream Mermaid.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I'm still going to hate the film.
Oh, I won't be seeing it. I'll done it.
Yep, so I'm going to move on to Irish box office top 10.
Bum, 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 bum.
We need a sting for that, definitely.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Yeah. In reverse order, as per usual, we're starting at number 10 with Philip Sabert, The Book Thief. Which still has not fallen out of the top 10.
But that does not mean it's doing well.
Definitely will this week.
It's still there.
Yep. Yeah, but
it'd be hilarious if it went up to number 4 next week, wouldn't it?
That said, we should point out this is a particularly weak weekend.
This is one of the worst weekends in recent memory, with the number 10 film making 28,000, which is usually number 20,
which
25.
Ironically, the equivalent of a week's salary for me, so it's amazing. I've made as much as The Book Thief.
At number 9, Universal's... comedy, in inverted commas.
You really, really didn't want to say that.
Yeah, Ride Along. It's because it's not funny. I have now seen it.
Oh,
it is not funny.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Saves me or Philip having to
trouble
ourselves.
We owe you,
take
man.
One for the team.
Yeah, no, that was...
Now, hang on. He took Ride Along. I took Book Thief. We have to see what you have to do.
At number 8, and still in the top 10, 6 weeks later, Dallas Buyers Club.
Still there.
It's hanging on in there.
I'm impressed.
Pretty well.
Yeah, they're doing it. It seems to have found a heart with the Irish audience, and here in particular in The Lighthouse they seem to quite like it.
That's good. I mean, it's a good film. I'm going to see it.
It's not bad. Solid.
It's very, yeah, exactly.
It could be worse.
In a world of dross, it's a standout.
Yeah, it's beating right along. That's a start.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, in a surprise, The Muppets Most Wanted is in at 7 in previews. Its preview weekend.
Well,
it's 7.
Yeah, quite a low, 68,222 euro.
Well, I suppose the fact that it's not the official release weekend, there mightn't be as much hype about it.
But they did do advertising for the release weekend, and there has been numerous TV spots.
True. And maybe because it's just not very good.
It's not. But
no one would know that. The word of mouth hasn't really gotten
well, I've told everyone.
Around.
Ditto.
I know, it's... yeah, it's...
But it depends what's in those TV spots. A little Gervais goes along.
Yeah, well,
yes, indeed.
It's not officially opening until March 26th, but it has another preview weekend next weekend.
Oh, you imagine the audience is already sick of it and they haven't seen it yet. It may well be a problem there.
It's what I'm calling Anchorman 2 syndrome. Too much overexposure beforehand is going to dent
it. It still hasn't gone away, actually.
It still hasn't gone away. It's coming back again.
No.
It's Anchorman 2, it already came back.
Really?
Yeah, no, it came back.
I must have missed
that memo. It was a one-week re-release with 600 and something new gags.
It didn't get into the top 10?
No, it was just released for 1 week at a limited number of theatres.
I must have had a busy week.
Number 6, Rise of an Empire.
300 sequel?
Yes.
That was number one last week.
It was number one last week, yes, and it suffered a 63% drop, which is the biggest drop since October of 2012.
I would only imagine also because it's terrible.
Wow, that's...
I would love to sit here and say I reviewed it and it's terrible, but I didn't, but I expect it to be terrible.
Ryan reviewed it and he was not overly impressed by it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I don't know, but 68... Well,
63%.
That's still huge, no matter what the quality of your
film. Intrigued to see what next week brings for us.
I can't imagine it'll be there.
Non-stop at 5.
Still.
Yeah.
Still.
Get off my plane, etc. Et
I'm convinced now the Malaysian Airlines thing was just one big marketing hoax.
Yeah.
We're not going to go there. No. Those poor people have disappeared.
I was not a put past the Hollywood
shooting.
Rumour has
it they could be in the Maldives now.
Rumour has it they could be anywhere.
Rumour has it Liam Neeson could be in the Maldives now. That's right here.
If Liam Neeson does come out of that plane, it'll be the most cynical thing to have ever happened in the history of man. And I know cynical. It's my Twitter handle, for God's sake.
It's true.
At 4, John Butler's Irish comedy The Stag. So,
showing that it's actually not a bad drop. Yeah. Like 90% is pretty good. I liked it. I went to see it as well.
It's pretty good.
It started a little shakily and I started to worry because I didn't think it was going to be my kind of thing. But actually kind of fell in with it and a decent amount of laughs. Fairly entertaining and it seems to have a little bit of legs, which is excellent.
That's good.
Like that's like that kind of like a quarter of a million for an Irish show.
Yeah, 4 million
not
today.
And it looks like it might stay up there for a little while.
Mm.
Pretty good, John. Good man.
At number 3, our collective film of 2014, Grand Budapest Hotel.
Your collective film 2014. No. Mine is Under the Skin.
Yes, but if I'm ruling that out because I don't like it, then the three of us do like.
We do.
This is not a democracy, apparently. But yes, Grand Budapest Hotel is fantastic. Deserves every penny it makes. It's a lovely film. Really funny. Excellent director.
And doing phenomenal numbers again. It expanded a little bit.
Three screens.
Yeah. Three screens. Oh, bless them. But it's averaging over 3,500 per screen. Like on an average site basis, that is far and ahead the best performing film.
Some distance.
By a long shot.
Good.
At number 2, and Jason just went to see it today, the Lego Movie.
Everything is awesome.
Philip also saw it at the weekend.
I haven't been able to stop humming that song since I saw it.
I really liked it. I had one major issue with it, which is the last 20 minutes.
Really?
Where I thought it was going to turn into something like 2001, and then it got ridiculous. But up until then, it was glorious. The script is glorious. Well put together, but
unbritish. Yes. they were building to something.
It was funny. It was irreverent. It was subversive. It was hysterical. There's so much in it.
Yeah.
It's going to bear endless reviewing and rewatching.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot there. It's very clever.
And it completely owns the box office for the first 3 months of the year, so congratulations to all involved.
Yep, past the 3 million mark.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And it's actually great to see something like that. It's actually not lowest common denominator. It's smart. It's,
and it easily could have been. It could have been just one big glorified product placement. But instead, it's really imaginative.
It's very aware of its own kind of look and how it uses everything within that. It's just very smart, very lo-fi, I would say.
Absolutely. It's great. A delight.
Yeah, it's an absolute delight.
Even the smoke is made of Lego. It's
everything. The water is the best bit. Amazing share when you got moved because everything's on top. It's fantastic.
Everything is made of Lego. Hence, everything is awesome. Yep. I can't sing.
Go see if you haven't seen it. Although, by the looks of it, everybody's seen it. But go see it again. It's fantastic.
Yes, and my spaceship t-shirt has arrived, and it is glorious.
Yeah. Ah, Lego.
Oh, man.
What a such a beautiful idea.
I want to go buy some Lego.
We should do that after the show.
I did, because I just came back from Denmark, and I did buy some Lego. I bought Good Cop, Bad Cop.
You have him on a keychain.
His head turns and he becomes good cop, and it turns the other way and he becomes bad cop.
Liam Neeson, we officially love you. And if you ever want, if you're listening, imagine, we'd love to have you on board, especially if you're going to do your good cop voice.
Hi there.
But yeah, no, it's great. I was in Denmark before, and I went to Legoland. In Denmark, where they have, you know, those giant buckets of heads, which are really, really disturbing. You can see them all together like that. I would say that, just if you're in the Lego shop.
Yeah, there's one in Copenhagen too. Yeah. You can just put your hands out.
It's really terrifying.
And pull out all these different heads. I pulled out a few random ones, and I got a Dracula, a skeleton, and Abraham Lincoln.
So I think we can sum this up thus. We like the Lego movie, and everything is awesome.
Yes.
And sadly, that's only at number two this
that
week.
It's 6 weeks in the charts, though, so, and this was at number one for four of them.
Okay.
It's still going pretty good.
Yeah. It only lost out by 12,000 to this week's number one, Need for Speed.
Yay.
Yeah, that's all I've got to say about it.
I haven't seen it, but...
Niall?
No, I didn't. I didn't go see it. I saw Veronica Mars, the film, which doesn't feature in this top ten, as it's only open in one screen.
Then we'll just talk about Veronica Mars. How's that?
Veronica Mars is actually surprisingly good. It's, not surprisingly good. The series was good, too. But it is very much a film for people who have seen the series.
Considering the Kickstarter, that's absolutely fine, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not quite the way... Serenity was able to be a film in and of itself.
That you could watch it without having seen
Firefly.
I actually had seen that before I seen Firefly, actually. Yeah. So yeah,
which is the producer's next film. Serenity is going to be shown on the 22nd of April.
Oh.
Yes.
I wouldn't mind seeing it. I never saw it on the big screen, but...
What a ride. Very, very good.
It's going to be great. But Veronica Mars film is very much an extended version of the TV show. The TV show arc, the first series arc was trying to figure out the murder of her best friend. This is she's trying to clear the name of her former boyfriend in this movie. Which so basically she's she was a teenage private eye when she was in high school, and she went and graduated, and she went to college and to law school, and now she's on the cusp of becoming a lawyer. But her former boyfriend gets himself embroiled in this murder case, and she goes back to help him out. It also coincides with her 10-year school reunion. And so hijinks ensue.
You know, if they play this out for maybe another couple of movies, or if they want to renew the series, it could just retitle it Murder, She Wrote, The Early Years.
There's a wonderful review of Need for Speed. Great number one.
Yeah, we really don't have anything to say about that. Besides the fact we haven't seen it, and it just looks terrible.
I like the games.
But this is the thing, it's a video game adaptation, and nobody has done a good one yet. Name me one good video game adaptation.
There isn't.
Yeah. Exactly.
But the thing is, they've adapted children's toys. Transformers and the Lego Movie have been turned into successful films.
Theme Park Rides.
Theme Park Ride with Pirates of the Caribbean has been turned.
Absurdity.
And yet they can't do one that has already a plot.
Yeah. So you're talking about general narrative structure.
There are games like Uncharted, which they're trying to make, which has a proper full-on plot.
Heavy Rain, if you want to know that.
Yeah, or go back for Shenmue.
Sure. They're there.
Zelda.
They're all there.
There's loads of them.
Super Mario Bros. Is great
hasn't
fun,
been
though.
A Zelda film, I will never understand.
The thing is, I think if they're ever going to work in the future, you need to get more... Well, okay, besides the fact that the scripts can be shaky, but you need to get more reputable directors on board. I say, let's remake Silent Hill, but put P.T. Anderson at the helm. Who's with me?
Why Silent Hill?
Because that was, for, to my mind, that was the closest any of these films came to being any way even near watchable.
Prince of Persia could have been, only for... Oh, I don't know, Prince of Persia could have been brilliant. Prince of Persia is very cinematic. The Sands of Time thing allow you to rewind time and to try things again. And that would look very impressive.
So, but it didn't.
It didn't. It was. It opens beautifully, though. There's with Jake Gyllenhaal skydiving off this palace.
If people are listening into this, they might think that I just said Jake Gyllenhaal is beautiful. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who would agree. But
I would imagine he would consider beautiful.
Yeah. I'd rather his sister. She's a grand looking girl.
She's not Maggie.
I'd take either of them.
A Gyllenhaal sandwich.
A Gyllenhaal sandwich.
Gyllenhaal is how he says it should be pronounced, but I don't believe
What does he know? What does he know?
Yeah, can I just reiterate? It's Ralph Fiennes.
No, it isn't.
No, it's Joseph. How can you get that so wrong? It's Joseph.
We had this discussion before. They're not the same person.
There is a thing. I was listening to the Dissolve podcast and they were doing a quiz. Well, Ronnie or Patrick McDermott? Which one's which?
Who's Patrick
Dylan McDermott.
Dylan McDermott, yeah.
Oh my God. I just realised, Jesus, they do look alike.
Bill Pullman and Bill Paxton.
Tell us.
Oh, I would ace that quiz.
Definitely. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, that one would be a bit too easy. But yeah,
there's a top 10 in that. Another week, I would say.
There was a great. Definitely. They dissolved her doing all these quizzes, and one was really, really funny. It was they were trying to figure out whether these action beats or whether these story arcs and different things happened in Dante's Peak or Volcano, or Armageddon or Deep Impact,
or Mission to Mars, or Red Planet, or something like that.
It turns out that both Deep Impact and Armageddon sent astronauts to space to stop the asteroid, and both of them had an exploding gas pocket in which one of the astronauts gets sent off off the asteroid out into space, but one has the astronaut been saved and the other has him floating out into space.
Right.
That's the only difference.
That said, though, Deep Impact is the marginally better film. Then again, that's like saying better. C is a better strain of hepatitis than B.
Oh, but it's not. It's a lot better than Armageddon.
Armageddon is by far and away the more watchable of one, though.
But it's god-awful.
It is god-awful, but it's
horrifyingly stupid.
I might have to hear the words animal crackers ever again because of that film.
Or the fact that it gave us the term space dementia. I hate that film.
I hate it as well.
Yet another reason to just add to my list of things I hate. I hate about Michael Bay. Armageddon. That's one. Right.
Never. I have a never-ending list
for Michael Bay.
Never-ending.
Speaking of never-ending lists.
Oh yes, your list.
I have this week's. What are we going to call this feature? This week's
guest list.
Guest list.
Ooh,
I like that.
Okay.
I'm doing this week's guest list. Last week we were talking about The Book Thief and how the only really good thing about it is its score. Now, you guys, I'm a kind of a score nerd.
Yeah. Score whore.
A score whore. Yes.
He is beyond a score whore. We frequently attend a quiz here in the Lighthouse, and when the soundtrack round comes on, Philip is writing it down before the first bar has been played.
Quite frankly, it's the only reason we keep him around.
Thank you, Niall. Thank you, Jay, for that. I appreciate that.
Anytime.
We're talking about that, and Only Gods Forgives came up as well, in that it's a terrible film with a great score. So I was just thinking about other films that have great scores, but are otherwise just terrible. So I came up with a list of 10, so I'm going to submit these for your consideration.
Interesting.
Okay, so now,
and not just from the score point of view. You mightn't even remember the score for just how bad it is.
From the film point of view.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
These aren't necessarily out-and-out bad films, because they were, the score would be terrible as well. But hey, I'd like to think every film has its redeeming feature. And for these films,
Pain and Gain. What's its redeeming feature?
I still haven't seen it, but I'll come back to you when I do. Okay, these are in no particular order, just a bad film with a good score.
Okay.
Starting off with Vangelis' wonderfully triumphant score to the otherwise unnecessary Alexander.
I was kind of concerned you were going to go Blade Runner there.
I may be cynical, but I'm not sacrilegious.
I have major problems with a lot of Oliver Stone films. Mm. But the director's cut of Alexander, I didn't mind that much. I actually thought it was okay.
Now, which director's cut? There's a director's cut. Where is there a revisited cut?
I don't think it was the first extended edition, I guess.
Okay.
I have
managed, which I think is actually shorter.
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I thought it was okay.
It has
wasn't the catastrophe.
It has serious problems. I don't understand why all the Macedonians are Irish. I don't.
But then bottom in the south, weirdly enough.
I don't understand how Angelina Jolie can be Colin Farrell's mother because she's 6 years older.
Can my mother look like that?
Ew.
Weird. Rosario Dawson is just completely wasted in that film.
Oh yes, and also don't forget. Hissy sex.
Yeah, oh yeah, but the gratuitous sex scene is just pointless. When he was known to favor, you know, Jared Leto's character and the hair. Oh my god, the hair.
I may rewatch.
Oh dear, the hair.
That wasn't what I planned to do.
I don't remember the score particularly.
It's a fine, big, triumphant, epic score from Vangelis. The kind of thing he does quite well. But as I say, I think it's about the only really good thing about that film. Try as some people.
I think I'm on my own then, by the sense of this. Okay, fair enough.
Okay. Before we move on, is the score for Troy any good?
The score for... Now, I'm glad you asked me this, because there is a backstory to that. The score for Troy is by James Horner. It's fine. But that wasn't the original score. The original score was composed by Gabriel Uret. I've heard some of it. It's a fantastic score. And it was rejected outright, and you can scarcely find it anywhere. If anybody out there has a copy of Gabriel Uret's rejected Troy score, please let me know.
Put it up on Twitter, we'll retweet it, we'll get some information out there.
I hope so.
Let's find it for Philip.
But anyway, that's a little bit of trivia for you. There'll be more to come.
Yeah, with Troy a shade of desperation also.
But Troy is foul.
Yeah, Troy is significantly worse than
I would have thought so, that's exactly. Yeah, but it gets a lot better press, though, is my issue with what people get. People get to see Alexander.
Well, they're both bad films.
Alexander's well shot. It just has serious script problems.
I think it's interesting. It's not great, but it's interesting. I find it interesting.
Mm. Well, interesting is a good word for it.
Well, if I'm not bored by a film, at least I'm...
It's a start.
It is a start. I mean, dull is the worst thing it can be. Mm. And Troy was dull. And that's for me, that's the worst it can be.
Yeah. Okay, and another choice. There are a few films here which I could have replaced with others. So... I'm saying, this is a beautiful score, Lady in the Water. James Newton Howard, M.I. Chiamlin film. Now, I say I could replace this because any of the last few films Chiamlin has done, Howard has delivered. The Last Airbender has a fantastic score as well, but I've gone Lady in the Water because it's just so beautiful, which is a contrast to the absolute piece of crap that appeared on screen.
How is this? We've recorded three times Lady in the Water, it's come up twice.
We just hate it that much.
I stopped watching his films after... what was the one of the films?
The Happening. The
Village.
The Village.
I stopped after The Village. I just could not take anymore.
To be honest, I think The Village is okay.
It really isn't.
The Village was designed as a decline, but it wasn't The Happening bad.
The problem with The Village is not... It's not that the twist... Just in case we're spoiling it for anybody, I won't mention
The twist is, it's terrible.
It's not terrible, it's just, it's not very inspired as a twist goes. You could guess it.
It is limp.
You could guess it.
It limps over the line.
Yeah. It does. There's a lot.
It's like, wow.
There's a good stuff in there, twist is just.
But it was. But it was enough for me as a director. I just said enough. I can't take any more of this.
That was a good point to quit.
Self-indulgent. No. Yeah, that's that point.
I said it was. I just like films were like that.
On the whole, though, I will say this, and this might be a controversial opinion, but I think The Village is better than Signs. Yeah, I said.
I didn't like Signs either.
Thank you.
I don't think it's better than Science, but I
the whole heavy-handed water thing exhausted me all the way through it.
Oh, it's an exhausting film.
The whole film, I
wouldn't choose to watch heavy. Either of those two again. Anyway.
Yeah, Science was very heavy. It was humorless. It was just.
Whereas I will happily watch Unbreakable again.
Yeah. Unbreakable was great.
Unbreakable is excellent,
but I won't rewatch it because I'm afraid I'll hate it. Like all those other films, so I'll just leave it in my memory.
I think
that it's fine and a fine film.
Shyamalan's intention, I think, with Lady in the Water was to try and make a kind of a fairy tale for grown-ups.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
If you can get it right.
He didn't. About the only thing that really did get that right was that score. It's
I you may look up a section or two of this list, actually, just to want to hear it rather than actually see it.
What's eight or whatever? Well, you
next.
Yeah.
C. Okay, I'm going to do this next one now because it will probably be the most unpopular choice on this list, in that it's a film a lot of people love. I think it's Foul, Sentimental Claptrap. The score, I think, could be guilty of that. It's Ennio Morricone's score to Cinema Paradiso.
Sacrilege.
It's not sacrilege, but I think somewhere between what Philip says and what you said, it's not a masterpiece.
Oh, far from
it. It's far from it. But I like it. It's enjoyable. But it's no more than enjoyable.
It's sick, sentimental, claptrap. If I want, it'd be the same
cynical
effect.
Cynical film, eh?
It would be the same effect as attempting to inject nougat. That sickly feeling. Just. Wow.
Why should you write it on the poster? It's just like injecting nougat.
Yeah. Foul. Every time they put that
either of the two Smurfs movies, they're injecting nougat. Then this isn't.
No, but this every is, time
if
that
you're calling something a masterpiece, though, you have to be.
Any time they put that kid's face front and center of the screen, I want to punch him. I hate that kid.
It's a celebration of the art of cinema.
No, it's not. It's just putting a cute kid up in front of a camera so that you get lovely, warm, fuzzy feelings from your audience. It's like The Book Thief, but with less knives.
It oversells it. It does oversell it.
It recently re-screened here for the 25th anniversary, and I was here, and it was amazing.
No, it is not.
Yes, it is.
There is one scene that I do appreciate. It's, of course, the bit at the end when the grown-up Toto does find the cub kisses.
That's I was going to say the Yellow Brick Road, but anyway.
Wrong movie.
Yes. Africa.
that was better than mine, I said.
Oh dear.
I had the virtual doffing of Gale.
Indeed. That was fantastic. And now very, the very score, nice. Ennio Morricone, he has done scores for a lot of Duff films in his career.
He's done a lot of scores.
And true. And even the score itself could lapse into that sentimentality, but if you can, divorce it from the film in your mind, and it's a lovely listen.
Okay. Good enough.
Now, another choice.
So can we destroy more of Niall's childhood dreams here?
Well, I don't think this next choice will. The next one is a favourite composer of mine, even though he's done relatively few scores, but he's already won an Academy Award, and he's just a fantastic composer.
Stephen Price.
Huh?
Price?
No, not Price, no. It's going back a few years. Dario Marianelli, and this is his score for The Brothers Grimm. Now, how many of you have seen The Brothers?
I've seen The Brothers.
I don't recall much of the movie or the score, but I have seen it.
Okay.
I remember not disliking it, but not particularly being wowed by the film.
We were talking about The Zero Theorem last week.
It's far too dark. Far too dark.
This is Gilliam for you, though. He's going to go dark at times. Yeah. And it was far too dark. And it's unpleasant to watch at times.
That was my biggest issue with it. It was just so dark.
In every sense. Even visually, it's just...
Visually dark.
It's grimy.
Try as Heath Ledger and Matt Damon might, it's just not a great watch.
It's something you don't really want to watch again.
And it suffered at coming out at the relatively same time The Big Fish came out, which was a much better way to tell a fairy tale.
Big Fish, though. I'm overly sentimental.
I haven't watched it in a long time, but I definitely need to rewatch. I liked it, though. But in terms of the score, it's, again, like James Newton Howard with Lady in the Water, it gets the fairy tale idea just right, and it's a lovely listen, sometimes quite haunting, full of lyrical little melodies, almost like a Pied Piper kind of thing. It leads you along into some dark places.
Well, that works.
Yeah, unlike the rest of the film, it's just dark, 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 dark.
Like Batman.
The next one, I don't think we'll be destroying any childhoods because the film will manage that on their own. It's three films at the price of one. John Williams' scores for Star Wars, the prequels.
That is just incredible.
This is the thing. The scores are great, but they're one of the few great things about those
films. It's also set against the best scene in the film as well. So.
What arguably one of the best scenes in the entire series.
Yeah, that's... There's a little bit of pacing problems with that particular scene, but it is...
Well, that's because it has to be intercut with the other battles.
That being the problem, yes.
Yeah.
close. If it was just Qui-Gon and Darth Maul,
Jar Jar bloody Binks.
I'm not even talking about the prequels. I have refused to talk about George Lucas anymore.
But do buy the soundtracks.
No, I will not give any money to Lucasfilm in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, look them
you're
up
not
on
giving
YouTube.
It to George anymore. You're giving it to Disney now.
I'm not giving it to anybody anymore.
but the scores are just John Williams.
Pirate them. Oh, I'll pirate them. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We do not advocate pirating here. I will point that out. But they're fine scores. They harken back to the original trilogy scores, and they're just great. Times just, like you said, Jewel of the Fates gets right up there to Williams at his best with the original trilogy.
That is an amazing, amazing song. Mm.
Now, next one. Ooh, I have a few I could pick here. Yeah, I'm going to go with this one, because how many of you have seen Cutthroat Island?
Me.
Niall with his hand right up there. What's your enduring memory of it, or memories?
Gina Davis.
Yeah, thoughts.
Everybody's enduring memory of it.
Even then, I'm struggling with that. It's just such a terrible, terrible film.
It is. It's a dreadful film.
It buried the pirate movie for years.
Yep, it took a swaggering Johnny Depp.
Arguably. And a massive, massive, massive flop.
But Mr. Harlan, wasn't it?
Rennie Harlan,
yes indeed. And almost...
you need almost some Rennie after watching it.
Indeed.
Almost completely buried Matthew Modine's career. Thank God he's back. But the one redeeming feature I always find it is the score by John Debney, who you probably know for scoring things like The Passion of the Christ.
Ah.
A fine score as well. But this one, it's just big, bombastic, good old-fashioned pirate swashbuckling stuff. As soon as you hear it, you just think pirates and army hearties.
Arr.
Unlike, say, Hans Zimmer scores for the other pirate movies, they're generic.
But I like it. I like the one for the original Pirates. The way I like the original Pirates of the Caribbean, I like the original score. Just became derivative after that.
Yeah, Klaus Badelt did the original score, and that was fine. Then Hans Zimmer took it over, and it just kind of beats you over the head with it. They're not great. Listen to Cutthroat Island.
There's just as apropos of nothing, Hans Zimmer coded the score to Taffin, which I was watching last night.
Wow.
You watched Taffin?
Yes.
Then maybe I shouldn't be living here. Pierce Brosnan's finest hour.
It is a glorious pile of nonsense, but Hans Zimmer name popped up on the...
That's incredible.
Isn't it?
I was watching the film anyway with an open mouth because it's insane.
It is.
And it's great fun. It's nonsense.
Midnight cinema kind of movie.
That meme is just that.
And you probably noticed a rare cinema outing for Dermot Morgan.
Yes, I did indeed.
Yeah.
And Frank Kelly's in there as well.
Oh, of course.
The guy that played somebody in Fair City is the main bad guy.
It has to be said now that, of course, last night being Paddy's night, RT did not put on any Irish films.
Why would they?
Yes.
They had Hangover Part 2.
Yes.
RTE,
I spit on them.
Idiots.
You are. Don't ever do that again. You need to have more
respect
for your
audience. But even if
they put
an Irish film on, they just put crap on anyway. They never put on good on. The Irish film scenes are remarkably dull as well.
They should have put on Taffin.
You should have put on Taffin.
No.
When I put it on, it was great.
See, a lot of people wouldn't have watched Taffin. Adam and Paul, though, would have got... You know, because people were already a bit drunk.
Adam Paul, you just went to town on Paddy's Day. People are a little cheerier than that.
Hello to Lenny, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, we love you, Lenny.
Yes, indeed. I've almost forgotten where I was. How did we get from Cutthroat Island to Taffin?
Because of Hans Zimmer.
Oh, God damn it, Hans Zimmer.
Do watch it, though, guys.
By the way, he will be coming back on this list again shortly. Next one. I chose Star Trek. The original Star Trek. The motion picture. The first one.
Yes.
The score by Jerry Goldsmith is fantastic.
Are we saying we don't like the film?
Oh, no, we don't. Oh, I don't. I certainly don't.
I don't mind it.
It's weak.
It is weak.
It is weak. No,
the problem with it, that's Robert Wise directing, the man who gave us Sound of Music, West Side Story. But he's there. He's trying to
make a space opera. Come on.
He was trying to do 2001 A Space Odyssey, except Except he seemed to forget he also has to do Star Trek.
He had no budget.
And yet he wanted to show off all the special effects he could so we get 10-minute shots of going past a spaceship. But just to kind of close the argument of this, the main theme is, of course, what became the theme for Star Trek The Next Generation. You're all humming it now in your heads. I know it.
Yeah, no, it's a fabulous, fabulous song.
I did not know that. I am not a huge Star Trek fan.
I am a huge Star Trek fan, and that is a weak entry into
the weak entry, but again, the late, great Jerry Goldsmith. Next. Who here has seen, and don't be ashamed to say it if you have, W.E.?
Oh, God, no.
You are not going to make me sympathise with royal Nazi sympathy. Not a chance.
Not in this lifetime, Charlie.
Andrew Riceboro is also there.
Oh, we do like Andrew Riceboro, though. Yeah, woman who is great talent, but is so often wasted. Mind you.
That sounds libelous, quite.
Underutilized is where
What you're aiming for there.
Yeah, okay,
just to avoid any, you know.
Fair enough. Issues.
But swag Madonna away.
Oh, Grant, I will. It's horrible. Horrible script, horrible direction. Just a terrible idea to begin with. But Andrew Riseborough's greatness, and this fantastic, very appropriately enough, regal score by a composer by the name of Abel Korzeniowski. He also did the score for Single Man. That's just wonderful string-led stuff. I'd say if you can find that soundtrack, give it a listen. It's really, really... It's got all the emotion that the film doesn't.
Yeah, the soundtrack will be anyway. I'll hear it because I don't think I'll ever be watching it.
Next. One of these is a film I hesitate even to mention because it's just that bad.
After you mentioned W.E. and you're hesitating.
Batman and Robin. It was on TV a couple of weeks ago.
It was the second worst. It was the worst film that Akiva Goldsman ever made. Now it's the second worst film that Akiva Goldsman was ever involved with, because that A New York Winter's Tale is worse.
But if you look up the score for either that or Batman Forever by Elliot Goldenthal, he is a worthy successor to Danny Elfman.
I love the Batman Forever score. I do.
I don't like Batman Forever film, actually.
It's not bad.
I have a soft spot for it.
It's not great, but it was safe, it was marketable, it was exactly the film the studio wanted.
The Batman coming through the roof and he goes, yours was good, his was better.
Yeah. Yeah. But that score is Elliot Goldenthal. It's full of French horns and brooding, and it's pretty much what you want from a Batman score. Again, less generic than what Hans Zimmer gave us.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I feel like I'm having a bit of a real anti-Hans Zimmer moment here. I love some of the man's work. I really
do. We thought you were a Zimmerman.
A Zimmerman. Boom. He's on fire tonight, folks.
Zero week.
Yeah, but fine scores to some very, one very, very, very terrible.
Nice to meet you.
Oh. Allow me to break the ice.
It's actually brilliant. Come on.
Even if you watch it as a parody.
It's not, it doesn't work.
No, it's dreadful because basically he has these ice cannons, and in it, at various different times, the ice has different effects. So
different properties.
Are you trying to apply logic to this?
The physics of the film are just appalling. Somehow Batman can drive a Batmobile down a vertical slope that has absolutely no friction at all. It's just, it's dreadful.
It's dreadful. It's awful.
Terry Gilliam said to me recently was that you at least have to make the physics believable. It's very true.
Well said, Terry.
And last but not least, that man again. We all hate the Da Vinci Code here, right?
With a huge amount of passion.
Good. The score is, again, the only good thing about... Okay, that's not true. Ian McKellen, Paul Bettany, and the score. They're the only three good things about the Da Vinci Code.
The end credits were pretty good. I really like those. I was waiting for them in the whole film, so they were great.
Yeah.
Love those.
But credit where credit is due, Hans Zimmer. Nice job there. Some great themes.
I don't even remember. I'd forgotten half the film halfway through the film.
I don't blame you. I expanded on those themes more in the Angels and Demons score, which is actually even better. It's an even better film.
I didn't even make the effort. I'll never see it.
That does not mean Angels and Demons is a good film, but surprisingly watchable. I'll give it that.
Well, if only for Ewan McGregor parachuting out of a helicopter, because that's always a good idea.
I'm presumably thinking, why did I pick the Irish accent? Why did I pick the Irish accent?
Oh, I'm really glad I haven't seen it. I'm really, really glad.
Why did my agent mistake me for Liam Neeson?
The role called for someone significantly younger than Liam Neeson. But.
Indeed. So there you go. There's 10 great scores to bad films. Please go look them up. They are
fine,
well worth a listen.
Fine, fine.
Thank you. We welcome any more input on that. So give us a tweet if there are any other scores you'd like to recommend from bad films. If you are that lone defender of Jerry Goldsmith's score to Baby Legends of the Lost Legend or whatever the hell it is, let me know. I want to hear from you.
Or whatever the hell it is. The working title, that was, I think.
It was. It's a film about dinosaurs before Jurassic Park. Lost Dinosaurs. It's as bad as you can imagine.
Well, Land Before Time.
No, even before that.
The Land Before Time.
Something like that. You could call it that.
Pangea Before Time.
Anyway, thank you for indulging my first guest list, and look forward to seeing what we have next time.
So I recently implemented a new column on the site where that's going to be a monthly feature, and it is trying to support Irish indie films that are crowdsourcing. And one of them is being made by our mutual good friend, Mr. Alan Buckley.
Ah, yes, indeed. Alan is the fourth member of our regular quiz team. We'll put that out first.
Yes.
And apart from that, he is a fine actor.
An all-round good egg.
Indeed. He had to go up against the charisma vacuum that is Network No and survive. So God bless him.
So Alan's film is called Neighborhood Watch. And it's on Indiegogo at the moment, and you can go support the fine work that man is doing. He's got Joe Rooney in it.
Oh, yes. Still best known
as
Father Damo.
Hey, there's worse roles, it's iconic.
What do you call your guy? I call my guy Frosty.
Father Immortality Frost. Relies, I think.
Who do you prefer, Oasis or Blur?
So there's two great actors in that right there. I'd love to see that.
We do some supporting and sharing on Twitter as well.
Absolutely.
Go, Alan. Remember his near Oscar speech. He won't, you know.
No. Nah, he might.
Yeah. I would. But he might.
I'm still waiting to hear your Oscar speech.
One day, sir. One day.
One day. One day.
All right, we'll leave it there for the week.
I think we shall. We've covered a lot, and we've been through a lot of bad films.
We've been through a lot together.
Yes, but let's never forget, everything is awesome.
Everything is awesome. Yes,
that's a fine, optimistic way to end the show.